This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And the Patriots are the champions of the world once again, 13-3 over the Los Angeles Rams in a game that didn't have a lot of pizzazz. It was a defensive struggle, and it was 3-3 in the fourth quarter, lowest scoring first three quarters in the history of the Super Bowl. But the Patriots did it, and Tom Brady has his sixth ring. Bill Belichick has his sixth ring. Bill Belichick, by the way, began his career in 1975 as a $25 a month assistant coach with Ted Marchibroda and the Baltimore Colts. He was a special assistant, and his job was to watch film with Burt Jones, the great LSU quarterback who led the Colts that year to the American Football Conference Eastern Division Championship, winning nine games in a row, memorably, to do it. And Bill Belichick was at Burt's side. He calls him Billy, Billy Belichick, who's a lot heavier than he used to be. He's a big man, and doesn't look good to have a football coach built like that, Joseph Abraham. But we have a football coach and a president who are quite portly, who are at the top of their game as far as where they are, world champions and leader of the free world. And Dr. Abraham of Church Point was with us once before. His book is Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. And before we get to that, before we depart on football for a little while, congratulations to Kevin Mawai and Johnny Robinson, two LSU stars who were voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They will be inducted later this year in Canton, Ohio, and that brings the number of five to LSU inductees in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They join Jimmy Taylor, Steve Van Buren, and Y.E. Tittle, all of whom have passed away, but that'll be five LSU players in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Dr. Abraham, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And you say there's a Bill Belichick connection to Louisiana.
Yeah, his father was a coach at, I'm not sure if it was SLI or USL at the time, but we assume he was living with his dad.
Yeah, his dad moved around the country. Was an assistant at Navy for many years as well. So it was an odyssey for Bill Belichick, who was born in the great city of Nashville and went to Wesleyan. You don't find many football coaches who went to Wesleyan. That's a great university.
Which Wesleyan? Because there are several.
Connecticut. The one that's recognized as an academic powerhouse.
Sure.
He played football there. But he left there, and he was looking for a job, and Ted Marchibroda of the Colts gave him his gig, and the rest, as they say, is history. But people forget that he also had a stint with the Cleveland Browns, 1991 to 95. His defensive coordinator was one Nick Lou Saban, and the Browns didn't do so well, and he got fired. Saban was a year ahead of the firing. In fact, the year that Saban left, they went 11-5. So Saban was a winner even then. But Belichick, after he lost Saban, he got fired, and then he ended up going back as an assistant, and he did very well with the Patriots and Jets and came back as head coach of the Patriots. And six Super Bowls, that's pretty strong. Six in 18 years. I don't think we'll see that in our lifetime again.
Unlikely.
Well, 877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join Joseph Abraham. Football coaches and tyrants sometimes have a lot in common. Vince Lombardi was certainly a tyrant, but it worked for him. And your book is Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation. I suspect that as much as we say we don't like authoritarian rule, that quite often we gravitate to it. Why is that the case?
It's safe. There's safety in numbers. This is one of the problems we face in the modern world. And it's easy to see on the other side. But we will believe what our leaders tell us, often without questioning, because the safety wasn't in truth. The safety was in numbers.
The safety was in numbers. And for those who believe that the time we're in today is much different than any other time, actually it's a lot tamer than it used to be, isn't it?
Absolutely. Today we just scream at each other, and before you lost your head.
You lost your head. They meant business in those days.
They did, one of the things I've been reflecting on, given the game yesterday and the passion for football in the South, is how much of the football mentality is part of our problem in politics. Defense wins championships, and that's fine for football, which is a zero-sum game. Nothing is created. But in politics, if you can stop the opposition, you don't need to produce progress.
Well, we do have a case in which we say we don't like these attack commercials, negative ads, as they call them, but yet they seem to work quite well.
They do.
And Donald Trump, he gave nicknames to all his opponents, and they stuck. And I'm amazed that somebody didn't give him a nickname. There's certainly areas that would be fertile for ridicule for the president.
Yeah, last time I was on, we talked about narcissism and the fact that a lot of political leaders in football and other fields, you mentioned Lombardi, have a strong streak of narcissism. It is interesting. The only person who ever landed any particularly good body blows on Donald Trump was Florida.
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio, who tried a few jokes and really rattled him. Rubio, it's not his style. He couldn't keep it up.
He ridiculed his hands, but ultimately he got on the Trump train, and now he's defending the president of the United States.
Yeah. But Trump cannot. If you watch him, if you'll remember at the Al Smith dinner when he's supposed to ridicule not just Hillary but himself, he really couldn't ridicule himself. He ridiculed his wife.
That's true. He said she gave the same speech as. Michelle Obama, and he was right, of course, but you're right. He cannot. There's not much self-deprecating humor when it comes to Donald John Trump.
And you see the same thing in football. Mm-hmm. We don't like anyone laughing at us or our team.
That's right. We we can laugh at the other guys.
Absolutely.
But not at our own guys. Now, a few days ago on this show, James Lee Burke was with us, and he compared Donald Trump to Huey Long. Now, their politics are vastly different, but are their styles somewhat similar?
Oh, yeah. They're cut from the same cloth. When I was on before, we discussed the fact that some narcissists, perhaps Bill Clinton, are very good at hiding it. And some are better and some are worse. Long wasn't as good as Clinton, but he was better than Trump at hiding some of that narcissism. And don't forget, Huey Long at times could laugh at himself.
He could, and his life ended at 42 as well. And who knows where he would have gone, but he had an enormous following, and radio was a big part of it. And he utilized the medium of the day like Trump utilizes Twitter.
Yeah. Oh no, he was a great orator. Like many demagogues, he could move a crowd to passion.
He could, and he did, and he may very well have. He certainly would have run for president, and he would have had, I'm sure, a substantial following. I don't know that he could have won an election, especially against Franklin Delano Roosevelt, but he would have been a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. One of his ideas was, which actually came out of a Cajun from Abbeville, was for Social Security. Cousin Dudley LeBlanc, you remember that from ancient history, proposed that idea. Long picked it up, and FDR picked it up.
Well, I see that Elizabeth Warren is proposing a 2% tax on assets above $50 million. That's very Huey-esque.
Well, didn't he want to confiscate everything above a million? And there have been speculations that's what got him assassinated.
Well, and a million then was kind of like $50 million now.
Sure, so, or more.
Yeah, so he was he was a man who certainly was going after rich people. He would probably be very happy that the tax exemption for Exxon was removed. He had his battles with ExxonMobil. And then ultimately his family became very well ensconced with the oil industry. His son certainly did, Russell Long. So times change.
They do. They do.
And sometimes it's the old axiom, follow the money, isn't it? Well, the book is Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths from Dr. Joseph Abraham, who is a doctor. You're an emergency specialist, right?
Yes, I am, when I have to pay the bills.
And soon he is moving, and where will you be moving?
We are moving to Spain, the south of Spain. Well, my wife is a local, but she studied in Spain, and
we're going to find out more about that and find out about how tyrants have been with us, demagogues from the beginning of time. 877-217-5757. Now the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We are with Dr. Joseph Abraham of Church Point, soon to be living in Spain. He's not only hightailing it from Louisiana, but leaving the whole country. Kings, conquerors, psychopaths, from Alexander to Hitler to the corporation. He's gotten some national exposure for this book from UL Press, right?
It is, and we have some more coming out. And, of course, one of the best appearances I've made is here.
There. Well, thank you very much. And it's a book that has relevance in this time, and as Joseph Abraham points out, even though we have a lot of bellicose talking these days, in the old days it was more than talking. I think just, 1945, they put Mussolini on meat hooks?
Well, yeah, and it goes on all over the world still. Look at North Korea or look at places in Africa, and even at times in Latin America, and many of the Middle Eastern countries.
877-217-5757. Dan downtown, you're on the air with Dr. Joseph Abraham. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dr. Abraham. Is it true what I read that Huey's plan was to run as a third party in 36, take enough votes away from FDR so that a Republican would become president, who would then mess up so bad that the American people would be begging for Huey in 1940?
That's a really good question. I'm going to punt to Jim. I'm not an expert on Huey P. Long, per se.
Well, I think it's apparent he was running for president, and he had a master plan, and it might have involved more than one race. And, Dan, as you know, it took him more than one election to win the governorship of Louisiana. He didn't win the first time. And quite often, Ronald Reagan ran for president three times before he won. Ran in 68.
He played that first loss on the weather.
What now?
Huey blamed that first loss for governor on the weather. weather kept the poor people away from the polls.
And the weather may also have contributed to him winning in 1928. It was after the great flood of 1927. John Berry believes that that was the catalyst for Huey Long sweeping into office. But we have this mantra now about populism. And Donald Trump is viewed by many as a populist. Is that a fair description of where he is on the political spectrum?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the points that bears noting is that the problem with Donald Trump isn't Donald Trump per se. It's that his supporters support him blindly and deafly and dumbly. We all do this with different things, with our religion, our politics, or, again, football.
All right. Hal in Monroe, listening online at WRKF.org, asks if that's why you're moving to Spain. Does it have anything to do with the leadership in our country right now?
Not really. It was an opportunity for us. I have a chance to take advantage of some things that opened up, and I'm about to start trying to market the book and find a European publisher.
All right. Well, they have problems in Europe right now, as we know.
I've heard.
The whole world's going crazy. What's this all about?
That's a good question. One of the things is I think we've forgotten what war looks like. I think we've forgotten just how horrible it can get.
Well, it's pretty bad, but when it happens. And we have been blessed of late not to have world wars, but some say it's inevitable, humans being humans and people having conflicts and big weapons available, that we're going to have not only a world war, but at some point a nuclear catastrophe. Is that inevitable?
Inevitable. I'm not sure there is. It is the history of humanity to go to war, but then there's the observation that no two modern democracies have ever gone to war.
But some of these countries that have embraced tyrants, like Germany, that was a sophisticated country, maybe the most sophisticated country in the world at the time.
Technologically, yes, but we need to remember they had only been a democracy for a brief period of time. It was not a well-established custom for them.
And Hitler never got a majority of the vote.
He did not.
Just as Donald Trump never got a majority of the vote. It is amazing in the United States, the only election in the country where a person can win and get fewer votes than his or her opponent is the presidency of the United States.
Yes.
And it would seem that might be something that needs to be changed, but I don't see it happening. And I certainly don't see any of our delegation, short of Cedric Richmond, calling for an end to the Electoral College.
We'll have to see. things are moving fast. There are people motivated on both sides to become active. I think the next – there's a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times, and we're there.
Question from a listener, and a good one. This one from Judy in Oak Hills, asking about the chain of presidential leaders. With Trump being a unique kind of person, a kind of an authoritarian ruler, does that mean that we'll go completely the opposite next time around?
That remains to be seen. That all elections almost are decided by the moderates, the people in the middle. And there's a lot of speculation that the field is wide open right now for a moderate.
It may be wide open, but it's hard to get a Democratic nomination running from the middle, and it's hard to get a Republican nomination running from the middle. We get the extremes. And right now, those who have announced on the Democratic side are largely candidates from the what would be considered the far left.
That's an outstanding point. One of my observations was that Hillary and Trump were running against the only person that they could beat. So Trump, it looks like, will be faced off against some Democrat. We can watch and see what happens there.
What happens if this fellow Howard Schultz runs as an independent? That changes the complexion of the race.
That does, and we've seen several elections where Nader threw the election, Ross Perot threw the election to the other side.
Mm-hmm. A question from a listener, too, this one from Tracy at the Capitol about the leaders we saw in the 30s and 40s. And by the way, Hitler was named Man of the Year by Time magazine at one point. Stalin. The question from Tracy is, could these types of leaders survive in the current media age? And with television, is that when we got to look at them, would they look so weird that we would reject them?
I don't think so. I think the only thing that saves us are traditions of some tradition of moderatism. And don't forget, there are people just like Hitler all over the world. They're just smaller.
Well, Donald Trump has changed not only the fabric of politics. It'll never be the same because of him. But he's probably changed the fabric of America. You know, now we can tell people basically what we think about them and without paying a cost that we used to pay. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, certainly our First Amendment rights are precious. I think that one of the things stoking this is agitation media. It's not there to inform us. It's there to make us angry and to sell us products. And the other thing is for some reason, all of us do it, I believe. On the Internet, we suddenly become someone other than we would be face-to-face.
Okay. Listener Bud asked about George Wallace, who had an appeal as a third-party candidate. I remember there was a book about him called The Politics of Rage. He captured something as a populist. He was a Democrat, but albeit a very conservative one, and ultimately he recanted his segregationist beliefs. But that wasn't that long ago. We're talking the 1960s. 50 years ago, George Wallace was a major player in American politics.
Things are changing fast, and I think we're leaving segments behind. When historians look at the transition from the Reverend Martin Luther King to President Obama, that shift will look extraordinarily fast. It's been, I think that's one of our problems. We've left a large segment of the population behind.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Abraham.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Doctor. Life is like nature, has a season and repeats itself. Venezuela, you know, we're, you know, sticking our nose in their, even in their problem, their business, and suggesting who they should or should not have as a president. Should other nations suggest us the same thing right now?
It's the golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rules. We've been sticking our nose, and particularly throughout Latin America, been sticking our nose in other people's business for quite a long time.
And the results have probably not been that great.
They certainly haven't been ideal. The question you can answer, the fascinating one with history, is you can't try it the other way and find out what would have happened.
What do you make of all the consternation over the wall?
I did an essay on my blog, bookscrounger.com, just recently, and I pointed out, I looked at the Chinese wall, at the Roman walls, the wall of Berlin, and what we forget, walls constrain us. And it's particularly concerning because it's an admission you can't control what's on the other side of the wall. And for modern America, where we are trying to export our Holy Trinity, free elections, free markets, free expression, it's almost an admission those things will not solve the problems south of our border. And so how strong is our system if it can't solve other people's problems?
Now, Louisiana rule since Huey Long has not been quite as flamboyant, although his brother was a character, as was Edwin Washington Edwards. But we have not been a state. For example, during the segregation years, we were probably the least of the southern states when it came to friction. How have we done it?
A lot of that had to do with French rule, which wasn't perfect by any means, but the Acadians are more tolerant and relaxed, and the New Orleanians, their French was more, they had no problem with contradiction and ambiguity. And so there was racism both places, but it expressed itself very differently. I think, and that's, of course, where the population of Louisiana is for the most part. New Orleans and the Cajun countries are over half of the country, of the state.
The book is Kings, Conquerors, Psychopaths, From Alexander to Hitler to the Corporation, from Dr. Joseph N. Abraham. And we look forward to talking with you again, even if it's telephonically from Spain. But congratulations on your good work.
Thanks, Jim.